S. The perceived callousness of the British toward the Jewish refugees aroused a feeling of great bitterness among the Jews, and this set the final stage for the forced abandonment of the British mandate. The British Army of Occupation was now facing a guerrilla war, but it never clearly understood whom it was fighting. The Jewish underground and terrorism. In April 1942, Menachem Begin arrived in Palestine as a member of the Andrus Free Polish Army. He obtained a release from the army to assume control of the forces of revisionist Zionism, which included elements of the Eigen and Lehis underground. Begin's objective was to use terrorism as the means of making British presence in Palestine intolerable to Britain. With passionate intensity, Begin led the fight against the British in Palestine. His mindset, which he retained even as Prime Minister, was an obsession with Britain's guilt in the Holocaust. Begin wrote, "From the Nile to the Euphrates includes present-day Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, and Iraq. One cannot say that those who shaped British policy did not want to save the Jews. It would be more correct to say that they very eagerly wanted the Jews not to be saved. They were highly interested in achieving the maximum reduction in the number of Jews liable to seek to enter the land of Israel." Emphasis supplied. Begin officially launched his war against the British on February 1, 1944. His battle plan was simple: an unrestricted campaign of terror. The most infamous of these terrorist acts was the bombing under Begin's orders of the King David Hotel, the British headquarters, on July 22, 1946, in which 80 people died. A particularly cruel deed perpetrated by the Etzel Eigen is described by Perlmutter as follows: "Begin's Etzel forces had kidnapped two young British sergeants, conscripts with no particular animosity toward the Jews, in retaliation for the capture of three Etzel men. In effect, the British were being held hostage." Then, on July 29, 1947, the Etzel men were hanged by the British in Acre Prison. The drama that had been playing out for months was coming to a grisly climax. Parents of the sergeants had pleaded for their lives. British officials called the hostage system heinous. In many ways, this was another misperception on the part of the British. The mandatory viewed Etzel and the underground groups as terrorists fighting an illegal war. Begin saw it as a real war, and viewed their fighters as legitimate soldiers. Etzel Chief of Staff Amichai Paglin said that "we had nothing against the two boys personally. We just wanted to stop the hangings." After the Etzel fighters were hanged, even Zionist supporters pleaded with the Etzel to spare the two British soldiers. The plea fell on deaf ears. Immediately upon hearing the news of the hangings, the two sergeants, hooded, were placed on chairs and a noose was put around their necks. Etzel men kicked the chairs away. The bodies were transported to a eucalyptus grove nearby and hung upside down from a tree for the British to find. The area around the bodies was booby-trapped and mined. Johnson, in his book entitled History of the Jews, expresses the opinion that the Jewish underground introduced the first use of scientific terrorism in the modern world, and that Menachem Begin was its most accomplished practitioner. In his final commentary on this period, Perlmutter gives Menachem Begin's terrorist activities a major share of the credit for driving out the Etzel, often confused with Lehi. Of course, performed numerous acts of violence against the British, not all of them as grisly or horrifying as the King David bombing or the hanging of the British sergeants. These included a daring raid on the supposedly impregnable Acre prison to release Lehi and Etzel prisoners. What was most important was that the acts were played out to the world, and it would not be wrong to say that they played as key a role in pushing the hamstrung, weary, frustrated British out of Palestine as did the combined efforts of the Haganah and Palmach, and the political tenacity of Ben-Gurion and Weizmann. Looking back at the struggle against the mandatory from the standpoint of modern times, there is no denying the importance of both the more moderate forces of Ben-Gurion and the terrorist forces of Etzel and Begin. Begin provided the often horrific spark which would stir and incite the British to the point where they were ready to leave Palestine. Ben-Gurion, often in politically ruthless ways, kept the forces of resistance together, and molded the state in being that was to become Israel. However, the Lehi, led by Yitzhak Shami, was too extreme even for Begin's taste. Among other terrorist acts, it was responsible for the murder in 1944 of Lord Moyne, British Minister for Middle East Affairs, and on April 26, 1944, the cold-blooded killing of six sleeping British paratroopers. Later, Shami's Lehi planned and carried out the assassination of Count Folke Bernadotte, the United Nations envoy. It is clear that throughout the history of the Zionist movement, the major factions were agreed on only one thing: they wanted all of Palestine, not a partitioned Palestine, except as a first step toward total control. In essence, this meant that a homeland for the Jews meant no homeland for, as we have seen, one proposed solution had long been to partition Palestine between Jews and Arabs in an attempt to accommodate both the Jews and Palestinian national movements. The insoluble problem continued to be that neither side wanted partition, each claiming the entire. In 1942, the Socialist Zionists, led by Ben-Gurion, reluctantly began to move toward accepting a partition of Palestine, but only as a first step in achieving a Jewish state encompassing all of Palestine. Ben-Gurion's philosophy is summarized in the recent book by Simmer Flappen, entitled The Birth of Israel, Myths and Realities. Ben-Gurion's long-range objective was quite clear: just as I do not see the proposed Jewish state as a final solution to the problems of the Jewish people, he told his party members, so I do not see partition as the final solution of the Palestine question. Those who reject partition are right in their claim that this country cannot be partitioned, because it constitutes one unit, not only from a historical point of view, but also addressing the Zionist executive. He again emphasized the tactical nature of his support for partition and his assumption that after the formation of a large army in the wake of the establishment of the state, we will abolish partition and expand to the whole of Palestine. He reiterated this position in a letter to his family during that same period. A Jewish state is not the end but the beginning. We shall organize a sophisticated defense force, an elite army. I have no doubt that our army will be one of the best in the world. And then I'm sure that we will not be prevented from settling in other parts of the country, either through mutual understanding and agreement with our neighbors, or by other means. In May 1942, Ben-Gurion convened a Zionist conference in New York City that was attended by some 600 delegates, including leaders from Palestine and from the European movements. The main thrust of the resulting Biltmore program, named after the hotel where the meeting took place, was that Palestine be established as a Jewish commonwealth integrated into the structure of the new democratic world. The British mandate, it was declared, could no longer assure the establishment of the national home. Significantly, the subject of borders was not mentioned in the final resolution. Yet the implications of the Commonwealth plan were obvious. Palestine was to be a Jewish state. The Arabs were no longer a party to negotiations, and had no role in, with the support of the increasingly influential and militant American Zionists in a coalition against the more liberal conciliatory element in the movement, Ben-Gurion gained passage of the resolution. The Biltmore program became the official policy of the World Zionist Movement, and heralded Ben-Gurion's ascent to unchallenged leadership. On his return to Palestine after the conference, Ben-Gurion continued to emphasize that Biltmore referred to a Jewish state in the whole of Palestine. At a meeting of the Histadrut Council at Kfar Vitkin, he explained that this is why we formulated our demand, not as a Jewish state in Palestine, but Palestine as a Jewish state, and he specifically advised not to identify the Biltmore program with a Jewish state in part. On August 5, 1946. The executive board of the Jewish Agency met in Paris and adopted the concept of partition as the official policy of the Ben-Gurion knew that President Truman was opposed both to a Jewish state in Palestine and to partition. Truman was, however, sympathetic to the refugee problem of the Holocaust survivors. Perlmutter calls attention to a popular misconception that associates Zionism primarily with the victims of the Holocaust. Ben-Gurion and the Zionists then decided to combine the Holocaust and independence, the plight of Jewish displaced persons and survivors of the camps, with the concept